So why don't you give me some feedback, because I don't know what, I'm guessing that it was sadness. What did you think about surfing around in their paper? Can you say some thoughts about what it was like? Characterize it?
A little like jumping into the deep end of the pool.
Okay.
Dense.
Okay, so this is the paper that of Bayesian models that's probably been used more than any. Okay, and how many of you have used it? Okay, so it's not like it's unreasonable to jump around and swim in this pool because we use the software. So in any event, it is not a difficult model, it's obfuscated. And in part it was because of the time it was written. So it's not that difficult. So let's take it apart. So this first question here, how is each of the things on the right-hand side of the equation distributed? Well, let's write those out. What are the things on the right-hand side? Well, we have the probability of the data given Z and P. We have probability of Z. And we have probability, unfortunately, of P. And it is a big P, okay? But that's the parameter. So those are the three things. Which one of these was easy to figure out? I'm sorry, I really can't hear. The allele frequency is the last one, because they actually give a name to it. What is it? Dirichlet. There's actually a lot of confusion about how to pronounce this name, because I look at this and see French, but it turns out that the person's name, okay, it's not French. It's from, so I, okay, I grew up in Germany. He was German, but he was from Alsace, okay? And so he's right on the border, and so you could say in German, Dirichlet, or however you would say it in French. And I don't know how to say it in French.
I would say in, like, more English,
Dirichlet. Yeah. So, So I have discussed Dirichlet in a French-speaking country, and people are like, I have no idea either. But a lot of the people I was talking to, a lot of the people who were commenting were Russian. So
if I was discussing it, it probably would be with English people, so I would tend to say Russian, because otherwise I wouldn't be understood. No.
And as I said, it's not in probability books. And so we can just make up whatever we want. As well. So I say Dirichlet. That's what we've said in the lab, and it seems to facilitate communication, so that works. And it was a while ago that he lived, and so he won't be offended. So it's Dirichlet. And what are the parameters of the Dirichlet in this case? What did they choose? Wasn't it 1, 1, 1, 1? So remember I said that Dirichlet was a multivariate generalization of the beta. So this is like beta 1-1. Okay? They're being general and allowing for any number of alleles, but they're assuming beta 1-1 if you're thinking about SNPs. And we just saw a bunch of models where we had beta 1-1 for allele frequencies, but we also relaxed that assumption. So they're clearly making a choice. They're not sharing information amongst loci about the allele frequency spectrum. Obviously, if you wanted to do so, you could modify this model and update it to make that change. You know how to do it now. So, what about this Z? So this is the no admixture model. This is the population of ancestry of that individual, where this individual came from. What did they write for this?
1 divided by K.
And they don't give that distribution a name, but we can. We know that this is the same as a multinomial where the cluster or population that an individual comes from are the different categories with parameter 1 over k and a single draw from that multinomial. So we have 1 over k that are all the same probabilities, and we'll sample 1. So if k equals 6, we'll get a vector with a random value that would be 1. One of them would be 1, the others would be 0. Okay? That would be the return for that type of distribution, a random deviate from that type of categorical distribution or a multinomial. but 1 over k suffices, but it's a multinomial distribution with one draw. Now, what about the likelihood, this last term?
They're allowing for more than two different alleles in the population, so doesn't it have to be a multinomial?
It is a multinomial, so that's actually the best answer for this. That's not what they told us, but that is, in fact, what it is. Where you have the allele frequency in population Z for locus L in their notation. And if you're doing this by individual allele copies, which they do, it's a single draw for those. You could also think of these as Bernoulli trials, where just each allele copy is sampled individually. That would be fine as well. But they didn't say, but if we were to rewrite this and specify the model, we could write it as a multinomial for each allele copy, where it could have various potential states that would be indexed by those Zs. Okay? Okay, so that was question one. Or A, as I'm noting it here. Were there any questions about that? So let's jump into the admixture model, which was the full, we want the full equation for the posterior of the model. So let's go ahead and write the full equation for the posterior, because this is not to be found in one nice long line. So maybe this will be a public service thing. That's an accounting of the parameters, Q, Z, P, and alpha. And those are given the data. And so we're going to write an equation for that. So we have our likelihood, which is where we always start, the probability of the data, Z, P, and Q. So those are going to be our genotypic data, or our allele copy data that we draw according to the population ancestry for an individual locus and the Q for that individual. Actually, Q does not have to be there, but that's fine.
Where did that alpha on the other side?
Where did that come from? Did I forget to list that? I forgot to list it before when I wrote the no admixture model because we hadn't talked about it yet. When I wrote the admixture model, I should have written an alpha in there previously. That's a parameter of the model, too. I often forget that it's in there. So we have a probability of Z given Q, and we'll talk about each one of these in turn. A probability of Q given alpha, and then hyperpriors on alpha, and a hyperprior on P. I think I'll take that one away. I think it's more correct to have it that way. So this is the hierarchy for the full model, and we want to think about how each one of these things is distributed. Here we're talking about the state of individual loci, right? We're talking about what ancestry group did individual allele copies come from at individual loci? And that can vary now. That's what we've changed. We don't have an ancestry class for the whole individual. Individual allele copies can come from different places. So in a heterozygote, or an individual could be heterozygous or have inter-class ancestry, okay, for its two allele copies, or both allele copies could come from the same class. Okay, and people have referred to that as interspecific heterozygosity or homospecific, homozygosity, where if it comes from both from the same class. So some of these things remain the same. So for example, the prior on allele frequencies remains Dirichlet, with ones for all the different possible alleles. There's an alpha parameter that is described as being uniform between 0 and 10. And it's the prior for the overall admixture proportion for individuals. Okay? And the admixture proportions for individuals is Dirichlet distributed with that alpha parameter. So this requires a little bit of explanation. Let's think about just two ancestry classes because that makes things a little bit easier. Okay? We know that with just two categories, the Dirichlet collapses to a beta distribution. And so we're thinking right here about the prior probability of an admixture coefficient for an individual when there are just two categories as a beta distribution with parameter alpha. Okay? And so what this allows us to do is basically summarize the hybridity of individuals. What's the variance in admixture proportions? That's what that alpha, when we estimate it, ends up being. There's assumed to be a single parameter that is shared. So it would be beta alpha alpha for two categories, or Dirichlet with a bunch of different alphas for each one of those categories, so that ancestry from any one of the categories is equally probable. Okay? There's just a single parameter there. This is not one of my many mistakes that I've written up. There's just a single parameter. It's just repeated for all the different ancestry categories. There's a single alpha, meaning that the prior probability of ancestry in any one of those categories is the same, but still it gives us an estimate of the variance by looking at the magnitude. Because just as with the beta, when numbers get big, we have low variance, same thing happens for the Dirichlet because it's just a multivariate generalization. Okay? And they set a uniform on it between 0 and 10. And they make some disclaimer about whether that's good or not and what you may or may not be able to learn from that parameter. So that's there. That's the prior probability of individual admixture coefficients. Then we have a prior probability on locus-specific ancestry or allele copy-specific ancestry. And that's multinomial. Q with n equals 1, because we're drawing individual allele copies with a prior probability given by the overall admixture coefficient of the individual. I talked about this yesterday. This right here is this dot, this line for the probability of ancestry in a particular category. And I said structure makes the assumption that the prior probability for ancestry at a locus is given by the genome-wide parameter. That's this. Okay? That's where it is in structure. And then finally, there's a multinomial, just like we had before, is that once you know the population ancestry for an allele copy, you can go look up the allele frequency within that category, and you're doing a multinomial draw from that with one draw per allele copy. Okay? So this last level is also multinomial. So what questions do you have? I know you're tired, and you're probably tired of listening to me on top of that. But what questions do you have? How can I fill in some confusion while we still have some time together? Yes?
This might be a stupid question, but how can you get all that from reading the paper?
I don't know.
Because I didn't. I'm not a stupid person.
Yeah, no, no. It took time. Yeah, I think I mentioned in passing yesterday that we've re-implemented structure and evaluated some of these modeling decisions and have chosen different ones. And so we had to understand what they did. So we just studied it. And also the Bayesian genomic clines is a variant on, it's an ancestry model, and so we had to understand what they did. I think we under, so yeah. I've been able to forget for the most time that I've been standing here, there's a video camera here, so I apologize to the slander or whatever, or libel, whichever one it is, when you say it out loud, or any other ways offensive things that have come out of my mouth or whatever. But it's documented, so but I apologize. Whatever it was, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. There was a question. Somebody's.
I have kind of a general question on this. What are your thoughts on selecting the optimal partition scheme with the structure run when you go through the different levels of K?
So, what in terms of model choice? And so, one of the things that is not a parameter in this that you guys are well aware of in terms of structure is that you have to choose a K. It would be super nice if we could put K there, wouldn't it? And that we could have that be an unknown and perform model choice. And I can't remember which paper it's in, because if you think this paper is big, the Falouche 2003 is a monster paper. It's like one of the biggest papers ever in genetics, I think. I can't remember where it is. But they talk about the difficulty of identifiability. And you know, if you've used this and you run multiple chains, that your ancestry categories flip around, and that it can be difficult. And so it's a difficult model choice problem. Conceptually, it's not difficult to add that as a parameter, but it's a difficult thing in terms of implementation. So that's part of the answer. In terms of model choice, obviously you can calculate the likelihood of your data given your parameters that you estimate, given K with different values. And people have looked at changes in likelihood. There's some other things that we might be able to do where we use information criteria as well, so we don't just compare the likelihood. So you guys know that when you compare regression models, you don't just look at the relative likelihood of the different models, but you incorporate model complexity, right? You want to penalize models that have additional parameters. What we've been talking about today, and I've mentioned a few times, is that if we have 100,000 loci and we're estimating allele frequencies in k equals 4 populations, we have 400,000 parameters that we're comparing. And we're comparing that to a model between k equals 3 and 4, where we have 300,000 and 400,000 parameters. It's difficult to, but there are ways of penalizing the likelihood for those additional 100,000 parameters. But one of the things we need to take into account is that they're not all independent. That's 300,000 or 400,000 allele frequencies. And we've actually shown that in many cases, allele frequencies are correlated with one another. So we would like to have a method that penalizes only for the effective number of parameters. And so those of you who have had a Bayesian class will know that that's what you can do with a deviance information criterion. So that might be a way that we can do this, and we're experimenting with it. It looks like you have to run the chain for quite a long time to get good estimates of the deviance. But it's kind of an experimental area, and it's a frustrating thing that we can't do it easily right now. That was a long answer. Yes?
Can you talk about some of the departures from the circuit model that you guys made in your re-implementation?
Yeah. So one of the interesting ones, the most important ones that makes it worth us maybe writing a paper about it, is that right here we have a parameter Q that's for the whole genome. Let me draw a picture. One of the ways in which you can characterize hybrids is by that Q, or by hybrid index. But another way in which you could characterize ancestry is in the locus combinations of ancestry. And so what I've suggested before is that you can make a little triangle here, and you would like to have on the vertical axis a parameter that we could call, I'll call it interspecific, but really I mean interclass. Okay, so these don't have to be species, but we'll call it interspecific ancestry. And to illustrate the issue, if we had an F1 individual, what would we, between two classes of individuals, okay, between two species, what would we expect its interspecific ancestry to be at every locus? Actually one. Okay, so that every locus would have a copy from one ancestor and the other for an F1. Its admixture proportion would be expected to be 0.5, and maybe that's the question I meant to ask. What would be its hybrid index? You would expect it to be 0.5. But at every locus, you would expect a combination of ancestry from both species. So you'd expect an individual to be up here, an F1. Where would you expect an F2 to be? How much is heterozygosity reduced with each generation of inbreeding? On average, it's reduced. Another thing I wanted to apologize for is I know you sign up for a workshop on next generation sequencing. A bunch of this has been intro pop gen, so I'm sorry about that too. So there's an F2. It has the same hybrid index. And as individuals advance in terms of generations of crossing between hybrids, they're going to have lower and lower interspecific ancestry as they fix for those combinations. But the expectation is that they still have a genome composition that's 50-50 from each category. So, I know this is a long answer to your question. We have this as a parameter, okay? And it's generalizable for any number of k. And so that you can estimate explicitly. You could have gotten it in a way out of previous structure by summarizing all the locus-specific ancestries and calculating a statistic on it. But unfortunately, what that did is it wasn't a parameter, it was a statistic on the data, and all individuals kind of fall on this curve, okay? And so you never could detect F1s with confidence. So we messed with that. And I think we messed with the independence of loci so that you could, allele frequencies, so you could estimate a theta from it. It's a really nice model for allele frequencies generally. So when I gave you guys the title earlier, you know, hierarchical models for allele frequencies, and we did all those things, this is just a variant on that, right? It's closely related to all those other models we talked about earlier today. And so we've made a hybrid of them. And it seems to be working pretty well. I can't send you software for it yet. It needs to be tested more. And we have to write documentation. So the question was, what are the implications of choosing the wrong K? It depends on what your science is, clearly, like what you're trying to infer about individuals. I don't have an easy answer to that. I don't have something that comes to mind immediately. It seems like it would cause an enormous amount of problems in certain situations. Most of the times when I've worked with this, I have a good idea that there are two species and hybrids between them. Okay, and so that's constrained by what we know about the biology. But it's a really difficult problem because within species, you also have population structure. Okay, so it might not end up being that useful, but there's a lot more to be done with it, I think, in terms of studying this problem. And one of the things, for example, one could do is build in some hierarchy into the model of allele frequencies and think about then admixture within that. But I don't know the extent to which we'll have information to parameterize that and do a good job with it. That was kind of lame. Sorry. What else? I've kind of lost track a little bit. Oh, you guys have gotten away without answering the third question, which was compare the model for correlated allele frequencies that they discuss in the appendix with our F models. Does it seem similar? How does it function? So this is on 959. So the model there is that allele frequencies at a locus are Dirichlet distributed. Sorry, I'm having trouble writing. P is Dirichlet distributed with F times a J. Looks the same to me. J looks like the ancestral allele frequency. F looks like the scalar. Okay, it's very closely related. It's a Dirichlet distribution instead of a beta, right? Because they've generalized it for the allele frequencies at all the alleles at a locus. But this is analogous to what we did. So that's their F model right there. That equation A13 could be considered an F model. And they use a gamma prior on FST. Who knows about a gamma distribution? What are its features?
Isn't it from 0 to 1 also?
It's not constrained to be from 0 to 1, but you got one of the limits right. It's greater than 0, okay? So it's positive. You can think about it's...
It's exponential. It's used for extreme modeling.
So the exponential is a special case of the gamma. And you can think of the exponential as the waiting time between successes, okay, the waiting time between events, and their spacing. The gamma is a generalization between the waiting time between any number of events, okay? That's one interpretation of it. So it's a spacing, so it's going to be positive. It goes to infinity. It can take a shape, if the exponential is included, that looks like something that you would recognize as an exponential. It can look like this. It can look very close to a normal distribution. So it's positive, but it's not bounded on the top side. And you can pick it that over some interval, it's very flat. Okay, so that it wouldn't necessarily be informative. But it's has the nice feature that it's positive. Okay. So I want to ask you one more question, and that's the last one there, that round two. Will you look at that question for just a minute? And then we'll discuss it as a group. There's a one final question there. So, what do you think? Is that reasonable? It must be reasonable for certain circumstances, yeah.
So, when you say they integrate equally, is that all loci have the same level of integration, or that they all are drawn from the same like distribution?
Yes. Yeah, they all have the same parameter. They all have the same expectation. There could be variance around that. They're not saying that there's no variance. It's just a stochastic portion of the model, right? So it has a probability distribution associated with it. But the expectation is the same for every single locus. So let's hear some arguments in favor of why that's just fine.
All the loci are supposed to be neutral.
Yeah, so if all loci are behaving similarly, and maybe that's neutral, then we would expect them to share that parameter. What else?
Well, rules of segregation, all those have equal chance of segregating one population.
Yeah, it's a good central expectation for all those loci within the genome.
Unless they're under meiotic drive.
If they're all under meiotic drive, then it's still a fine model for it, because then they're all going to be overrepresented in the same direction. Okay, so yeah. So if there's heterogeneous expectations amongst loci, then we might be making mistakes for those individual loci. But what if we're just trying to estimate Q?
At the individual level?
For the whole individual. Then we might be fine, right? If we're not interested in locus-specific ancestry, but we're interested in Q, we might be just fine, and we probably are. Okay, we have a lot of information about that, and if there's not heterogeneity that's really biased in one direction but not the other, if there's heterogeneity but it cancels itself out, that it's in both directions, then this should be a fine model for overall individual level Q. So that's the one side. In what circumstances would it then not be that great of a model?
Well, I mean, we know from empirical data that there are parts of the genome that introgress a lot more than other ways of looking at it.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in those particular parts of the genome.
Yeah, and you guys remember that green cartoon I put up of real data yesterday where we saw that heterogeneity and we want to fit statistical functions to that? So that's the assumption that we relaxed when we did Bayesian genomic clines. We didn't assume that it was a one-to-one line. We introduced those alpha and beta parameters that distort things away from that Q expectation. Q is still there, but we have distortions relative to that. And then we can then sample those and understand, get posterior probability distributions for those alphas and betas for each locus so that they distort away from the one-to-one line. We have a model, the base model looks like this, where the probability of ancestry at an individual locus is given Q. That's the base model. But now we have, we're going to put alpha and beta in there as well so that we can distort things relative to that. Okay, and we estimate those for each locus. Okay? So that doesn't have to be done, obviously. It adds model complexity. And so one of the advantages of not taking that into account is to have a simpler model for overall admixture coefficients, if that's particularly what you're interested in. Okay. Are there any questions about? I'm sure there are questions about structure, but are there things? Yeah.
Actually, I'm confused about the difference between their alpha parameter and their Q parameter.
Yeah. So the alpha parameter that they have, let me remind myself, is the prior probability, it's the parameter for the prior probability for Q for individuals. Okay? And so we discuss that as a Dirichlet distribution. Let's make it simple and make it a beta. Okay, so this was, you're asking about the probability of Q given alpha?
Well, I thought I understood that one was locus specific.
Q is not locus specific. Neither is alpha. Z is allele copy specific. Okay, so each allele copy at a locus can be drawn from one of the particular clusters. Okay, and the Z, its expectation will be this straight line. Okay, that's the probability distribution, or the parameter for it.